Hello and welcome to the Massachusetts Farm to Table podcast, where we explore the fields, kitchens, and stories that make the Massachusetts food scene so special. I'm your host, Nissa Gadbois. Each week, we'll connect with farmers, food producers, and the community that makes the Commonwealth's food scene so vibrant. Join me as we meet the passionate farmers, food producers, and chefs who are shaping the farm-to-table movement right here in Massachusetts. Hello, and welcome back to the Massachusetts Farm-to-Table podcast. This week, I'm sitting down with Terry Lawton of Oak Knoll Farm in Foxborough, Massachusetts, where they raise beef, veal, and make yogurt and cheeses. Terry is an 11th generation farmer on her same farm, and it's just such a pleasure to speak with someone who's so enthusiastic about her work. We also talk a bit about being a woman owner in a male-dominated field. We also talk a bit about the science of agriculture, as well as the value of trades for future farmers. Thanks for tuning in, and here's my interview with Terry Lawton. Hi, Terry. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. It's great to be here today.
So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your farm, how you got started?
Sure. So I grew up on a dairy farm in Foxborough, Massachusetts. It's an old dairy farm. I think I'm the 11th generation to own and operate the farm. Right now we are selling meat, milk, dairy. We milk 24 Ayrshire cows, which is a heritage breed. They have very good milk for cheese making, and the taste of the milk is very, very sweet, which is why we really like that cow for our business. So customer satisfaction and quality products are one of our number one priorities. And so we feel like the Ayrshire fits in with that mission really well.
So I raise goats. Tell me what is it that makes a dairy animal better for cheese than another breed of the same animal?
Yeah, so the Ayrshire cow has a really small fat molecule, and that means that there's less fat lost and less protein lost during the cheese making process. So they found that where particular hard cheese, like say cheddar, would have a 12% yield when you're using Holstein milk, but when you're using Ayrshire milk, it might be up to 14%. So that means that for every 100 pounds of milk you use, you'll get 14 pounds of cheese.
So that does make it makes a significant difference when you're thinking long.
Yeah, so the volume difference is good, and then the other part that's really good is the quality of the cheese itself is a little bit higher quality. It's got a little bit more complex taste. As you age it, it does some really interesting things. Like, for example, our Asiago at 6 months, it's a nice, soft, mild cheese. Then at a year, it's less soft and a little bit more fruity. And then at 2 years, it has these lactic crystals that just explode in your mouth, and it's nutty and fruity and just a really incredible bouquet. That it's amazing that it started as milk, because it doesn't taste anything like milk, but that's how it started.
That's amazing. Do you make your own cheese on farm?
Yeah, so we make our own cheese. We milk the cows. We bring the milk up to the cheese room. We make cheese, hard cheeses, soft cheeses. We make some yogurt. And then some of the cheeses we age, and then some we sell fresh. We'll sell them to farmers markets, at farmers markets, in the farm stand. And we sell it to a few other farm stands in the area.
So are you also producing liquid milk for drinking, cream, butter, those types of things too?
So we don't produce any cream or butter, but we sell our own fluid milk, and then we sell cream and butter from other local dairy farms. So it's like one of those things where we don't have the equipment that's necessary to make butter, but this farm over here does, so we'll buy that from them. And so that our customers, when they come into our farm stand, they're able to get locally sourced dairy products, even produce during the summer, some locally produced baked goods, a little bit of everything.
Sounds like you're really involved with other local farms and producers.
Yeah, that came about like actually during COVID. We had just taken over the farm and we had just started building relationships with other farm stands in the area to bring our cheeses there. And then when the shutdown happened, I had farm stands calling and saying, look, you're going to bring an order of cheese today. Can you increase that order? And can you take 40 cases of lettuce? And just because they had a customer that was planning to get it, that canceled the order because they were closed. And so they needed to move that product quickly. Or the other thing was, the be networking with among friends. Like, so one of our customers would have another friend or another farmer in town that needed to move a product quickly because they're very perishable. Produce is very perishable. And so in that situation, there was one guy, he had four customers his whole life. He was in his 50s and he had always sold to these four customers that were restaurants. And so for his first time in this 40 years of doing business, he had no customers for all this product that he had made. And so he just wanted to see people be able to get it. And so we were able to help out in that situation too. And those relationships have stayed. So that's the great thing about building those kinds of relationships. We're not necessarily at the volume that we were during the COVID and the shutdown, but we're still maintaining those relationships and networking to, I don't want to say, barter product, but we're, doing multiple exchanges. So when I go to one farm stand to drop off cheese, they're giving me apples and salads and tomatoes and things like that that I bring back to my farm stand for our customers.
I think that's been a running theme so far through the podcast is how tight the agricultural community is here in Massachusetts. It's like a second family for a lot of us in a lot of ways, and everybody steps up to help each other out when there's a need. And also, we're really creative about how to deal with crises like this.
Well, and we're so interdependent, that's one thing that really strikes me. I feel like in a lot of ways, where we are in Eastern Massachusetts, it's almost an agricultural desert. Even though there's so many people around, there's so few farms that we really need to work hard to support and encourage each other because it does get harder to farm when you're the only farm in town or, the neighbors are complaining about animal noises or sound or whatever. Those are the when we're in those agriculturally isolated areas, we really need to support each other even more so than maybe in Western Mass where there's more agriculture.
Yeah. So, you said you have a farm stand on your farm. How do you feel like you're supported by your local community?
Yeah, well, we are supported in ways I wasn't even expecting by our local community. So one of our big projects right now is a new processing building in Calburn. And this is a huge project. It's the largest project we've done on this farm for over 100 years. And it's a lot of money. And we were able to raise over $20,000 from the community for our new barn. And then because we had applied for a matching funds through the Massachusetts Economic Development, what is it? The Massachusetts Growth Capital Corporation is the exact name. And that was economic development money. And they matched, or actually they doubled the contribution. So the people gave $23,000 and they gave us an additional $40,000 towards the new building. So that's just one example of how the community is coming together to support us. So we were able to win this competitive award and use that support to leverage us into being able to purchase, higher well, that actually went towards the HVAC system in the new building. So,
Wow. How many acres are you farming?
We farm approximately 70 acres. Now, most of the land that we farm is conservation land in town, or else land that maybe used to be dairy farms, but it's now just open land, and the landowner wants to maintain the quality of the land. So we will basically farm the land in just trying to create good environment, especially for the community to enjoy, whether it's hiking trails or fishing or whatnot. The conservation land in town is pretty important for people in the area.
Sure. So you were mentioning about during COVID when so many of the restaurants had shut down, and a lot of the smaller shops that tend to be, you know, farm to table type places had to shut down too. Have you found that picks up for you? Did you have sort of restaurant customers, or what kind of wholesale customers do you serve?
Yeah, we did have some wholesale restaurant customers pre-COVID. Some of them, you know, made it through, a lot of them didn't. And we do work with several, I would say specialty food shops more so in the area. There's a, I think it's very popular, that the cheese boards, charcuterie is very popular. Yeah. And also like the wine and cheese tasting or beer and cheese. That's another one that we often get calls for, that local businesses will want to feature local cheeses and local beers, and they try to pair them together. And that's always interesting to see who we end up getting paired with. And you know, a lot of times we know them outside, you know, outside through industry groups or whatnot. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool. We do have a lot of breweries here in Massachusetts now, and a lot of wineries just in the last, I don't know, 10 or 15 years, they really come on. It's kind of fun to watch how that whole thing is changing and growing. So you just mentioned how you had some your products are being used basically as collaborations for things. Does there seem to be a favorite one of your cheeses, for instance, that folks like?
I think probably, well, when you ask like which cheeses are our favorite or customers' favorite, it's kind of like trying to say one child is more special than the other. And I can't really say that. I think that there's some cheeses that are more suitable for different situations. You know, so for example, like the Young Asiago is very popular with a couple wineries. But when people ask for like a really artistic cheese, like I'm tempted to send them towards the Vintage Asiago, which is our 2-year Asiago. It's kind of interesting. Like one time I was at a farmer's market and I had a man come up to me. He said, "I am from the Netherlands and I really like good cheese. Tell me what you best have." And I just handed him the Asiago. And I said, "This is the one that you need to have."
And that's always so flattering when you get folks who are used to having really good quality wherever they come from to approach you. Were you ever able to get feedback from him? Did he send you a message after? Because that would have been really neat to have that.
No, you know what? I didn't need to get feedback from him, but just because I know that that product is going to be really good no matter what. Even, for example, like our veal, we do get a lot of feedback about our veal. So we raise our veal on pasture, and the calves are over 500 pounds when they go to the butcher. And so it's very different from what people would get like at a store here in the United States. And we have a lot of first generation Americans come to the farm stand for the veal, and they say it's just like at home. And that makes me like feel like, oh, I know I'm doing something right. You know, when they, you know, when he has a thick Italian accent and he's like, "This is the best veal I've had in North America," you know. So, and then you know that's the right thing. We're doing
wow,
it right
that
now.
really moves and motivates you, doesn't it, to
Yeah.
It helps you to know that you're doing it right. It
Yep.
feels so good.
Yeah.
So you said that you're 11th generation farming in your family.
Yes. In this location, yeah.
Wow. And so does it go back farther than that at different locations?
Yeah, so originally our family came over in 1636 from east of England, and they were escaping persecution, and the first settlement was in Medfield, and then that was in the 1630s, 1650s, that range. And then 1732, one of the sons came to what's now Foxborough. At the time, it wasn't called Foxborough, but and he built a mill on the corner. You can still see where in the Neponset River, there's like a pond because he built a dam that he used to run his mill, where he'd make lumber and whatnot for different people in the area that were needing to build houses, because that's what they were doing at the time. Yeah.
You are very closely connected to your land where you are. So I imagine that colors the way you practice farming.
Well, there's a lot that influences the way that we farm. I mean, my dad grew up on this farm. He's been farming the same land for 70 years, and his father before that. And, when you have that kind of tenure on the same piece of property, you get to know the land really well. I know where the good soils are, where what will grow well, what won't grow well. And then the other part is, I went to school at Purdue University and got my bachelor's degree in agriculture, and that gave me a lot of exposure to the dairy industry, how to make products, how the regulatory process works. I actually worked for the state as a dairy inspector for a couple years. I was a consultant working for the state with farms that were looking to start making cheese and start making value-added dairy products for a while. So those experiences all tied together to give us to the position where we are. Being a woman-owned business, it's not easy. There was many classes that I was in when I was in at college that I was the only female in the class. And I could tell you plenty of stories. I remember one business management class I was in. It was like the capstone class for the business management majors. And I was the only female in the class. There was only about 10 of us. And we were analyzing our businesses and developing a business plan for what we were going to do after college. And it was really interesting because most of these guys were farmers out in Indiana. They were growing corn and soybeans and were planning to go back to their own farms and trying to develop strategies to make an income for themselves rather than basically taking from the farm, how to add value to the farm. And so with that task, with that as our objective, I mean, that's how we came up with the business plan for the cheese business. So, yeah.
So you came into your time at university knowing that you would return to the
Yeah,
family.
so I actually wanted to study agriculture as a high school student. I actually wanted to farm since I was like about 9 years old. I knew that I wanted to farm. And my high school guidance counselor, actually not my particular high school guidance counselor, but when we were doing this high school guidance thing, this woman said to me, "Well, why do you want to go into farming? That's such a waste. You're so smart." And I'm like, "You know what? Farming is actually really technical." And I don't think that I probably had the wherewithal to tell her that, but farming is incredibly technical. My degree for agriculture, I had to take 2 semesters of chemistry, 2 semesters of biology, plus a biology elective. And then I also had to take physics, and I had to take anatomy and physiology, I think I was supposed to take two classes, but somehow I only got one. I don't know how that happened. But anyway, so there's a lot of science there, and there's a lot of business management there. You know, when we are looking at farming, we're not talking about some Pollyanna-ish thing where we're going to be bouncing through the fields and throwing seeds here and there, and they're going to magically come up. That's unrealistic. And I think that what we really need to do is understand that agriculture is a science. Food is heavily science influenced. You know, when we look at how do we make cheese, there's an incredible amount of chemistry going on there and biology going on there that goes into that. It's not something that happens by accident. And the more that we can know about what's going on behind those processes, the more effective we can be as farmers and also as leaders in the community.
So, what advice would you give to another young woman or a young man who is multi-generational farming and says sort of the same that you said, I want to be a farmer. What advice would you give to him or her?
Well, I think it doesn't matter whether you've farmed before, grew up on a farm, or are getting into it for the first time. What you really need to do is get into it. You know, if you are in high school still, you can get a job on a farm or volunteer on farms. You can also go to school for agriculture. There's a tremendous amount of opportunities for internships on farms and also study abroad opportunities. I was actually just reading this morning about some in Africa. They're really trying to help people have access to more nutrient dense food by implanting embryos from cows that will make really good milk. And they're putting them into the local cows. And the goal is that the calves will come out with good milk and also disease resistance from the local that will live well in the local population. So we're talking about trying to just give access to food for people who are exceptionally poor and have almost nothing right now. So things like that that you can do as a young person at university, and you can really change the world. Whether or not you decide to come back and farm, there's so many opportunities in agriculture that it's not just farming, that when you get into university and you're in the mix of like what's new and what's going on in the world and how we're trying to feed people, then it gets really exciting. I think I found it very exciting. And I think that that is one thing that I really appreciated about going to school. Now, you know, if you don't want to go to college, there's a lot of arguments about that. You know, getting a skill, a trade. I mean, I have people who come to the farm stand and they say they want to farm. And I say, great, what kind of experience do you bring to the table? Or what skills do you bring to the table? And they're like, well, I can code. And I'm like, well, there's no coding here. What about, can you change an oil? Can you change oil in your car? Or, you know, anything like that? Fuel filters, can you change fuel filters? What about wiring or plumbing? Can you fix a leaky pipe? And for people who are able to do that, they're going to be so much further ahead than someone who is only spending their time playing video games.
I keep thinking back to what you said about the guidance counselor. You said basically she sounds like she was saying, well, what a waste of your intellect, when actually we found that farmers really use a lot of their brain. They're not sort of just using one channel on their brain. You have to really be able to think critically, be
Yeah,
able
being able to
to
think out of the box is really important with farming because you're never given everything like an ideal situation. You're always going to have to improvise. You're always going to have to adapt. You're always going to have to overcome. And being able to do that is going to set us up to succeed. And that's where I think like trades, I feel like trade school teaches people how to do that perhaps better than university. Now, I'm not you know, b both I think have value. But I think that what we choose to do with our time as young people is especially important to where we're going to end up later in life. If we're learning how to change oil, if we're learning how to change a fuel filter, if we're learning how to start a lawnmower and mow the lawn, or even just clean, like I really think 90% of farming is cleaning. I feel like that every day. It's like the joke, like, okay, you want to farm? Well, here, clean this. Because the reality is that it, when we're producing food, hygiene is so important in every level. And especially with dairy, because milk is such a perfect food and everything will grow there. So we need to make sure that every time we make cheese or every time we make yogurt, that everything is perfectly clean when we're done, and then it's sanitized just before we start again. So that way, the only thing that's going to grow in that cheese is the exact things that we want it to grow.
Right. I think a lot of people don't realize just how much goes into producing anything dairy. I have a little experience on a more on a homestead level here, of making cheese and yogurt, and it's a great science lesson if you have
Yeah, absolutely.
the opportunity to make it.
Microbiology,
Wow.
big time.
Unreal. I've learned so much just living here on the farm and taking care of animals from breeding, birth, unfortunately death, all of that sort of happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we get the whole cycle. So I have one last question for you.
Sure.
You could have three people on your farm to dinner, living or historical, who would they be?
This is a great question. I actually, I had a hard time coming up with three people, but I want to talk about one person in particular. And I don't know if you've ever heard of Tara Brach. She is a meditation teacher, actually, and I really appreciate her work. She helps so many people. She's also I don't know if she's a counselor or social worker or whatnot, but anyway, she has a huge following, and I would love to have her come to the farm to see what mindfulness in agriculture is. And the reason why I say that is because I think that there's a lot of people who don't realize that farming, especially with animals, can be mindful. And one time she had this one talk, this Dharma, they call it a teaching, and she was talking about cows and being taken away from their mothers. And I'm like, you know what? She really doesn't know. She's you There's so many people in this world that hear a little bit of what goes on, and then somehow things get skewed to like it's just not reality, and there's so many people who are so influential and who have audiences these days, whether it's through TikTok or whatever, and without having firsthand experience of what it actually means to help like you said, a cow have a calf, or how to make cheese, or why is it that we take the calves away from their mothers, and why is it sometimes we don't? So, which is true, like in the beef industry, the calves stay with the mothers. And in the dairy industry, they don't. And there's a lot of reasons. A lot of it has to do with like microbiology and disease maintenance, and trying to keep animals healthy. And how do we do that? So there's so much that goes on in behind the scenes in agriculture that people don't necessarily realize that are really practical, reasonable things. And they have so much influence over so many people. And being able to get those people to come out to farms and see what we're really doing and who we really are. Because we're not like, I think of the movie of Mice and Men, we're not like Lenny and George out on the farm, like heaving 50-pound bags of grain. We're savvy business people who are working hard to make sure that our animals are treated well and that our customers are getting the safest, most highest quality food that they can possibly get.
Where can folks find you if they want to come find you, or can they find you online, or?
Yeah, so we're online, www.oaknollfarms.com. We have the Facebook, we're on Instagram. I don't know,
Can
all
they
the things.
come to the farm and visit you as well?
Yeah, we have the farm stand at the farm, and we have open houses throughout the year. So we're not quite set up yet for visitors. Our goal is with the new building that we're going to have people be able to walk in and watch the cows get milked and watch the cheese being made, and then also take some cheese home. And which I think is that connection to agriculture, connection to seeing where their food is actually coming from, is what we really need, especially in this area. There isn't anything like that right now in
Another
our area. So we're excited to bring that to the table.
that's awesome. Another thing we've been talking about recently, all the farmers have talked about education. It's so important.
Yeah, I mean, education is good, but a lot more is about experience, and that interaction.
With our customers when they come, it's so important to educate them about where their food comes from, how is it produced. They have a really a much better appreciation for what they're buying. Terry, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it. I'm excited for your project.
This episode of the Massachusetts Farm to Table podcast is brought to you by Renaissance Farms Permaculture and the shop at Renaissance Farms. Please visit them online, and while you're there, sign up for the weekly newsletter and get 15% off your next order from the shop. Each edition of the newsletter includes farm news, articles, recipes, and updates on upcoming classes, courses, workshops, and special events. Subscribers also receive exclusive subscriber-only discounts each week. Links are in the show notes. Thank you for joining us on another delicious journey through the Massachusetts Farm to Table podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to follow us on social media and join our Facebook group where you can join the local Farm to Table movement. Links are in the show notes. If you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions for future guests, we'd love to hear from you. Please drop us a line at massachusettsfarmtotable@gmail.com. Until next time, remember to eat local, support your farmers, and keep the farm-to-table movement moving. Thanks for listening.